Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Batman Nightcast, a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. I'm Chris Franklin.
And I'm Ryan Daly.
And on this podcast, we review the comic book adventures of the Dark Knight Detective and sometimes his partner, Robin the Boy Wonder. This episode, our theme is Bruce Wayne Target, as we cover the next chapter of the original Black Mask saga from Detective Comics number 553, and continue our series-long coverage of Batman and Robin Year One by Mark Waid at Chris Samney with issue number 8.
Before we get to that, we want to give a big shout-out to our Patreon sponsor for this episode, J. David Weider. A lot of our listeners are under the mistaken impression that we do this podcast for love of the game. That is not true. Chris is in it for the money, and I'm in it for the chicks. If you want to help Chris by supporting Batman Nightcast or any other show on the Fire & Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FWPodcast.
It's the podcast, right? Chicks dig the podcast.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, since last time, there's been some pretty exciting Batman news come out about things that we talk about on a regular basis, right?
No kidding. Really soon after we released the last episode, we found out from DC that Mark Waid and Chris Samney are teaming up again for Batman and Robin Year One Dynamic Duos, another 12-part series starting, I think, like in August or September, the first issue comes out. And as soon as I saw that news, I was like, this is awesome. And also, come on, guys, we're not even done with the first one yet. Give us a breathing room.
And it's all, once again, the Fire and Water Podcast Network makes these things happen.
So, absolutely. You're welcome, everybody.
And I noticed in the notes you bring up something interesting about the title, don't you?
Yeah, Dynamic Duos. And I was like, is that a typo? It seems weird for the press release. But no, it's duos plural. So I was like, what could that mean? And then I looked a little bit into it, and it sounds like Catwoman and the wedge she puts between Batman and Robin will be kind of a major factor of the storyline, but also that she might be getting a sidekick of her own. And
I really kind of hope it's his version of Pussycat that was played by pop singer Leslie Gore on Batman 66, because I really love that episode where they brainwash Robin.
That would be awesome.
I always think about whenever you say there's a wedge, Catwoman puts a wedge between Batman and Robin. I think of Batman 66 when Catwoman's pitching that she could become Batman's crime-fighting partner, and he's like, what about Robin? And she's like, oh, well, we'll just kill him.
Problem solved.
And Julie Newmar saying that, you know for a second, he was like, well, maybe. Yeah.
You make a good point there.
You make a good point, Julie Newmar in a skin-tight costume. Yes.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what he does with that concept of her having a psychic. Like, I shouldn't feel this way, but I want it to be anybody other than, oh, who is Selena's kind of young...
Holly,
yeah, the girl from who we meet first in Year One, and then she ends up becoming a bigger part in, like, the, I think the Ed Brubaker era of Catwoman. Mm-hmm. And nothing against that character. That character was great. I just kind of, it harkens to an era of DC and, like, these characters that I was like, I kind of want Waid and Samney to eschew that era and kind of stick with something a little bit closer to... Well, where they end up with this series, which is a lot closer to Batman 66, which is why I think your theory that it could end up being Pussycat or something similar to that, that might be right on the money. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, we did see Holly, though, and Selena on the fire escape in one episode, the one where Robin steals the bat sign.
Oh, that's right. That's true.
So it could have been a setup.
Hmm.
You know? Yeah, I don't know.
I forgot about that. No, good point. Well, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we do see some interesting... The pages that we got, and I know 13th Dimension, I have to pitch 13th Dimension for Dan Greenfield because I write for it all the time, but I love 13th Dimension anyway, and I know Dan ran this story, and he shared some pages that DC had shared there, and we do see some interesting, of course it's beautiful art, but we see that Catwoman is in her classic purple gown outfit with the green cape. I'm assuming that's what the colors will be. It looks like that outfit, which is great.
Yeah,
I prefer that to the Mazzucchelli I mean, I love Batman Year One, don't get me wrong, but I always thought she looked more like a mouse than a cat in that outfit.
I can kind of see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just from when I was growing up, when I was getting into the comics, I liked the kind of one piece, unitard, like the Year One, or like the Jim Ballant drawn, like the purple suit from the Nightfall era. And after that, I always kind of had a fondness for that. And I always kind of thought her Silver Age look with the dress with the open slip and the cape was a little busy. I was like, I don't know if I want that for Catwoman. And then I saw the way she was drawn in Who's Who by Dave Stevens. And I was like, you know what? I'm sold.
And then Alan Davis, juror and detective.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Covered. Yeah. It's like, wow, that outfit can be, it can really work. Yeah.
Yes, it can. She can make it work.
Yes, she can.
The other thing about the preview art that they showed, it shows Batman and Robin in what looks kind of like a castle or catacomb setting, like fighting a bunch of guys kind of in hoods and robes, sort of like you kind of get the impression they're like cultists. And maybe I'm thinking that because it reminds me of the first time we see Batman in Darwin Cook's New Frontier, where he's fighting these like cultists in a church when he meets John Jones for the first time. And it's like because these guys were obsessed with the center. So maybe I'm kind of putting a little bit of that onto this. But I just kind of thought, I was like, okay, are they fighting these cultists in this thing? Or I was like, or is this like a take on the Mad Monk or Mad Monks plural or something like that? Just maybe the way they were dressed. I don't know. But I thought that would be interesting.
Yeah, it looks – I'd like any of that. I'll take any of that, but yeah.
And I maybe I'm thinking, again, because putting this in the era, like right now we're kind of talking about – well, we will be sort of in the start getting a little bit into the Monster Men territory. And so I'm thinking about other, Golden Age or early adventures of Batman and Robin in the history, and, the Mad Monk would fall into that category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be down for that. And like the 80s revisitation, I won't be too scared to buy it, So.
Something else coming soon, Batman the Caped Crusader, which actually I've still never found out the reason for this, but it's not part of HBO Max or DC. It's an Amazon show, but that animated series, the season 2, is coming in the end of July.
Yeah, I was totally, I don't know what happened. I guess I just didn't know they ever went into production with this. I didn't know. I even thought the other day, about a month or so ago, I'm like, I wonder if they're ever going to do another season of that. And I think it's because, no, it was earlier this month because I was watching Spider-Noir on Amazon Prime, which is also not on Disney Plus where you think it would be, but that's because of the weird Sony, Disney thing with Spider-Man. But yeah, I was thinking, well, is there ever going to be another season of this? And then boom, they announced that there's another season already done and ready to come out next month. So it's like, wow, okay.
Yeah. They've got some images of it already, teaser. So, and yeah, I'm super excited for that. I mean, I think we talked about this like a while ago, that seeing that show a couple of years ago was one of the things that relit the candle in my flame for Batman and kind of jump-started the resurrection of this podcast. So, yeah, really interested to see where they go with the second season.
Yeah, me too. I probably really need to go back and rewatch the first season because it's kind of I binged it all, all at once pretty much over several days. And it was, I did it so quickly, it didn't have time to quite settle into my brain like a lot of things do. So I might have to go back and rewatch season 1 before I get to season 2.
Not Batman specific, but other DC media stuff. Supergirl, I mean, at the time that you're hearing this episode, folks, if you listen to it the day that it drops, Supergirl should be in theaters tomorrow. But we're already getting some set pictures and some leaks about Superman Man of Tomorrow, the next one from the Superman world coming out a year hence.
Yeah, I wonder if they're not they're filming outside and things like that, but I wonder if they're not trying to hide it more because they want to build momentum for this and by extension Supergirl. Because Hollywood, the box office has not been kind to big budget Hollywood movies this summer.
It's weird. It's so weird.
It's so weird that the Mandalorian and Grogu did not perform up to what they expected. And then, unfortunately, Masters of the Universe is apparently, unless it has a miraculous recovery this second weekend as we record this, it'd be coming to the second weekend, it flopped.
Yeah.
So which I hate because I thought it was a fun movie. I know mm-hmm. some diehard fans who are teeth gnashing about the approach they took to it. And I honestly get it. In my heart of hearts, I wish they dialed the humor back a touch, at least a little bit. But I enjoyed it. Me and my son Andrew went and saw it together, and we had a hell of a great time watching it. And I think it deserved to do way better than it did. But I can only imagine that Warner Brothers and DC are pretty nervous at this moment, hoping that Supergirl breaks that trend.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, we got a Spider-Man movie coming out later too, so we'll see what that does. But
yeah, I feel like Spider-Man's fine. I just feel like people will come out for Spider-Man. I really do. I think if there's one that they're going to come out for, it's that. But Supergirl's still kind of a, you know, Superman did well, but it didn't blow the doors off, I think, like some people thought it might. So, you know, and they're already filming the next Superman installment. We've got the Clayface movie coming out later this year. Of course, with the trend toward horror being so big, it might be the biggest moneymaker of them all, especially as just going by budget to revenue, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. These like tiny, minuscule budget horror movies like Backrooms and Obsession that are being made by YouTubers, like YouTube guys are coming into this and like they're blowing the doors off of like established, you know, franchise movies. And
yeah. I saw Obsession. It's a great movie. It really is.
I've heard it's great. I really want to see it.
It is a very, and it's got a Superman connection because the lead, Indy Navarrete, I probably just butchered her name and I apologize. She was Lana Lang's daughter on Superman and Lois. In the love interest kind of best friend of Jordan Kent, Superman and Lois's son, one of their sons on that show.
Nice.
She's a very good actress. She is fantastic in that movie and what she's asked to do. Very disturbing movie. I don't know why the hell we're getting into this. It's nothing to do with Batman, but it's a very good movie. Just be prepared. It's got a couple really gory moments, but it's just more the atmosphere and the tension of it is more horrifying than what you see on screen for the majority of it. And then there's one incredibly disturbing moment in it that you'll be like, holy crap. I don't want to say anymore, but yeah, I really enjoy that. I haven't seen Backrooms. I understand that's good as well. I want to see that, but yeah, they're mowing the grass of all these big budget Hollywood movies this year. I don't know what Hollywood's got to be like. What the hell are we supposed to do? You know,
I want Supergirl to be really successful in part because I like the IP. I like the world that James Gunn is building with these characters and I want to see more of this. So I want them to be emboldened to do more things, but I also want it to be successful out of spite.
Yes.
Just because of like whatever the algorithm has done. Like I can't open a social media thing right now and not just be deluged with a million different fan accounts or something like that, just showing previews or posters or pictures of Supergirl or just things about Millie Alcock. And inevitably there's just like a subset of like these stupid whiny ass incels just complaining about her, making fun of the way she looks, degrading her appearance, just bullying, obnoxious, stupid stuff. And it's like, shut the hell up, you guys. It's like, you seem so juvenile. First of all, she's beautiful, beautiful girl. Might be an unconventional beauty based on whatever weird-ass standards we've adopted, but she's still a beautiful woman. They're not going to put somebody who's not beautiful in one of these movies. It's just not the way Hollywood works.
No.
So, yeah, so I want that to be, because part of, like, you still get these Snyder Bros just all these years after the fact, still saying, like, Superman, you know, was the box office disappointment. It didn't live up to the thing. It's like, yeah, because your stupid movie, Man of Steel, poisoned the well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I hope it does gangbusters. I hope that a lot of women come out to see it just to, you know, again, to F you to all these guys. Kind of a bar. I know it's not going to do what Barbie did, probably, but in a kind of a Barbie-like moment of, you know, women like saying, no, we're going to go see this movie. And I mean, obviously men, I went and saw Barbie too, obviously, but,
right.
But yeah, you know, I mean, it was kind of a big moment for mm-hmm. for women. And I hope that's the same way with Supergirl. I really hope it does well. I'm never read Woman of Tomorrow. I probably should have before this. I'm not the biggest Tom King fan of, I mean, what I've read of his stuff, I like how he writes. I'm not a big fan of what he does with the characters. He breaks the toys, you know, a lot of times. But I think within the context of this, I think it does make sense to have Supergirl have a different personality than Superman, you know, and to start at a different place than Superman. And it almost makes more, it makes more sense in the movie universe than it does dropping that story into the already, you know, ongoing DC continuity to me.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
And so I don't mind it as much in a movie as I would in a comic, because it's like, well, this is a different universe and we don't know how. We saw Kara as Supergirl briefly in Superman, and of course they'd already knew how they were going to take her. But you know, she calls her cousin a bitch, and she's been out drinking on a, you know, red sun planets, and you know, so I mean, I didn't kind of like that at the moment, but I've gotten over it and I've kind of accepted it, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. It looks like a great, you know, action adventure space romp that's got a lot of heart and a good, she's going to grow as a character throughout this, obviously. That's the point. And I'm really looking forward to it and what comes after. And as far as Man of Tomorrow, I'm, you know, being a big superpowers guy, I'm down for any time you see Lex in his war suit, battle armor, and the fact that they made a practical suit, props to them. I mean, that's great. I mean, I don't know if it's made out of foam or what the hell it's made out of. Because he can move around in that thing. It's ridiculous how well he can move around in that crazy thing. But I'm looking forward to that too. So I'm all down. I hope, and you know, with all the crazy business with the purchase of Warner Brothers and everything, I want these movies to do well. So they leave James Gunn the hell alone and let him continue his DCU without a bunch of interference, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, like we said, by the time you're hearing this episode, Supergirl should be out, so you can see it or not and make your own decisions. And hopefully, if it's good, we will do some sort of review at the network or something. But, you know, cross our fingers.
Yep, that's right. I guess we probably ought to talk about Batman, though, right? Because this is a Batman.
Probably.
This is a Batman podcast.
Ostensibly.
Yeah, ostensibly. So let's jump back in time to August 1985, or actually May 30th, 1985, when Detective Comics number 553, cover dated August, as I said, went on sale. The cover by Klaus Janson depicts Batman pulling at a skull mask clinging to his face. Ominous smoke emanates from the mask. Behind him stands Black Mask, holding another smoking mask, while in the foreground, three lifeless bodies with shriveled faces lay at the Dark Knight's feet. The text reads, "The Mask of the Black Death," a play on The Mask of the Red Death from Edgar Allan Poe. So what do you think of this cover, Ryan?
It's gruesome. It's horrifying. Batman is in this clearly kind of like pain-stressed position. Black Mask is just standing back. Like, I don't know. There's something kind of stiff and unnatural about the way he's standing, I think. I don't know. But the other thing about the image of Batman, like, it's one of those things where the more you think about it, it's like, what exactly is he tearing? What is Batman pulling off? Like, is it a skull mask on him? Is that, like, the skin or something? Like, I don't know what he's pulling off. It looks like, whoa, this is amazing. But then it's one of those, it's like, I'm not sure what's happening here.
Yeah, I mean, is it a skin-tight mask that has a skull printed on it that's on his face? Or is he literally, something's on his face and now it's dissolved his face into a skull? that's what you're saying, which obviously that doesn't happen. And in fact, this does not happen in the issue, which is disappointing, honestly. I wish it did, but
okay. I think I know what my confusion is. The mask that Black Mask has in his hand, I've always interpreted this as that was on Batman's face and he pulled it off. So it's like the white skull is supposed to represent like Batman's face has been peeled off. But I'm like, then what is he peeling? That's not bone. Like, so I think we have to interpret like the mask that Roman is holding is the mask from one of these other corpses that are littering the ground.
Yeah.
I think that was my confusion. Because I'm also like, why are his eyes red? He's not Skeletor. Speaking of Masters of the Universe, that we're just...
You boob, you put this mask on my face! You know, so I don't know. But that's right. it is a striking cover. I mean, I love Batman's posture and his musculature. It's a very kind of Neil Adams-y looking Batman. He's very lean and muscular. So that's great. You know, especially since Klaus Janson will be known for inking the Dark Knight Batman, who is, you know, essentially the Hulk in a Batman costume. So, but it's a great cover. And I remember I remember buying this one off the stands, although I could not find my physical copy of this issue, which was very distressing. I'm like, where in the hell am I? Detective jumps from 552 to 554. Hmm. I'm like, where in the hell have I have I put that book in the past 40 years? I don't know, but well, we'll jump into the story. The False Face Society of Gotham. Doug Minch was the writer. Klaus Janson was the artist in the interior as well. John Workman was the letterer. Adrian Roy, the colorist, and Lynn Wein, the editor. At the Siona's family crypt, Black Mask initiates more members in the False Face Society of Gotham. Another Wayne Foundation executive named Trenholt is given a mask full of the Siona's toxic, insoluble makeup with deadly and horrific results. Batman confers with Gordon, and both know Roman Sionis is the man they are looking for. In addition to targeting the top brass of the Wayne Foundation, the False Face Society is also filling in the vacuum in Gotham's underworld. Lucius Fox warns Batman that these murders and the Wayne Foundation's bailout of Janus Cosmetics may hurt the Foundation's financial standing. To show their confidence in their business, both agree to continue with a famine relief benefit the following night. Before one of the execs can attend, the False Face Society murders and disfigures him with the toxic makeup as well. Bruce is accompanied to the event by Alfred's daughter, reporter Julia Pennyworth, who tries to grill him on the murders to no avail. Bruce notices he's being tailed by two people in a car across the street. Black Mask and two of his goons abduct Cersei from her home and apply a non-lethal version of the skin cream to her face within a hideous crone mask. Batman and Robin entrap the two False Facers following Bruce, but they don't have any info as to Black Mask's whereabouts. Black Mask gives the scarred Cersei an ultimatum. She can pick a mask and join him as his queen, or get a lethal dose of the makeup. Cersei chooses a beautiful face to hide her now hideous one. So what do you think of this one, Ryan?
It's good to see Batman do some stuff in this issue. Like, we didn't get that last time.
That's true.
It's good, and I know that you're going to point this out. You have this in your notes later on. Because this story is shorter, there's a condensed number of pages, and I wonder if Munch's script was originally for like a full 21 or 22 pages, and he had to trim it down or something, because this feels jumpy, it feels rushed, there's just like a lot of kind of jumps. It's a little kind of scattered and just... I don't know, I can't come up with a better word. It's just jumpy. It feels like we're jumping forward, and it doesn't have any time to breathe.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, it's the stories were shorter right now because before there had been Batgirl backups, and it had switched to Green Arrow and sometimes Black Canary, which is what we get this time. So there isn't a whole lot. I feel like there's a lot of new stuff that happens here. It's just kind of like more Wayne execs are getting killed. Bruce is getting followed. They even, Batman and Robin appear, but... they don't even really learn anything from the people that they, you know, the False Facers they fight. The only thing that really happens of consequence, honestly, that's different from the last issue is that Cersei is abducted and scarred, but we were promised that pretty much last issue. So, you know, so, okay, we probably have very different opinions on this. What do you think of the art in this issue?
I don't hate it. We talked about Klaus Janson, like, 100 years ago when we started the podcast, I think, the early days of Nightcast. There's a roughness, a kind of etchiness to his pencils that I can dig under certain circumstances. But again, maybe because of this one feels condensed or kind of trapped, some of the art feels a little bit unfinished. It's crowded. I didn't hate it, but it didn't blow me away. And part of that is, I mean, we've been looking at some great other artists we've been covering Marshall Rogers, Tom Mandrake, Chris Samnee, and other great artists recently. And this one is kind of like, okay, it's fine. But
yeah, I'm not the biggest Klaus Janson fan, especially of his pencils. And it's according to who he's inking to. If it's somebody like, if it's Frank Miller, I think he's great. If it's, you know, Jim Aparo, no. It's like literally putting motor oil and peanut butter together, in my opinion. I do feel like it looks like this one, like you said, the cover's great. I mean, I think if the artwork looked like what was on the cover, I'd be like, this looks great. But I feel like there's a lot of, like the one panel that the little tiny panel of Bruce and everybody at the dinner. I mean, like that looks like he literally drew it in like 2 seconds. You know, it's just, it looks super rushed. And he might have been. He might have had a tight deadline. He might have been a fill-in on this. You don't know, you know. So I'm not trying to throw shade on him. But if you look at the Green Arrow Black Canary story at the back that's drawn by Jerome K. Moore, it's like, wow, why wasn't that guy given Batman? You know, it's
right,
like,
right.
Such a great artist. I never understood why he didn't become a fan favorite. That's just more my speed, too. I prefer that polished look of comic art. I know in a lot of ways that's... Right now, you know, you got Gene Colan, who I love Gene Colan. I know you love him more than I do, but I love Gene Colan, and I love Tom Mandrake, and it's just Klaus Janson is just, he's over that line with me for that same kind of school of that scratchy kind of not super polished, not super defined look. And I like some of his stuff. You know, I'm not saying I dislike Klaus Janson in general, but when he's not like really like, you know, nailing it down and he's just kind of roughing it out, I'm not a big fan, and that's what this is. So
yeah,
but we don't want to be negative. It's, you know, there's some good panels here and there and good close-ups of characters that look good. It's, he's obviously a very talented, very good artist, very legendary artist, so what the hell do we know. But you know, we just, you know, that's, it's our opinion. And you know, if you disagree with us, let us know in the comments. I'm sure you will, so that's fine. I did notice one other weird thing, and it might have to do with that whole rush thing you were talking about. This is another weird nitpick. There seems to be more hyphenation in the word balloons in this comic. I just noticed there's a lot of hyphenated words. I don't know if Klaus didn't leave John Workman enough room to put the balloons in properly, the text in properly, or what. Did you notice that?
I didn't, but I can see it, yeah, going through it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Just a weird nitpick. So we get a bit of a recap with how the False Face Society initiation works. This is probably for the few folks who didn't read The Last Batman, or maybe they're just buying Detective, although I don't know why in the world you'd do that back then, because that'd be like back in the 90s buying one Superman book. You have no idea what the hell was going on, you know? So
maybe they just wanted to read the Black Canary story. That's what I was doing.
Well, that's true. It's like me buying Wonder Woman for the Huntress, you know? That's true.
There you go, yeah.
Isn't this the story that leads up to her getting the Jazzercise costume?
The very next issue after this one is when she gets the one designed by Steven DeStefano.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's favorite.
And yeah, and all these issues, these backups, I covered those on my Black Canary blog, however many years ago that was.
Yeah, and I like the cover, the next one where Black Canary's jumping through the hoop like her original Carmine Infantino. That's Klaus Janson. So
yep. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Trent Holt's murder, the Wayne exec, is more disturbing because he's awake. I mean, that's like, oh, they put that on his face and it just like apparently kills him pretty quickly, but then when they show his face later, you know, Klaus Janson does a great, you know, shriveled up corpse face. It's like, blah. So, yeah. So what do you make of Bullock spilling the coffee on the bat signal?
He's doing it on purpose, isn't he? He's just dumping his coffee out on it?
Like, I couldn't tell. I mean, that's another thing. I'm like, Bullock is like a strange cartoon character in this issue. It's like he's...
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like... I don't know. I thought maybe he had it. Maybe he had it sitting on the bat signal, and then he's got it in his hand on the page on page 4, and then on page 5. I don't know why. It looks like he's dumping it out on purpose. Why would you dump it out on the bat signal? Especially something. Why would you dump liquid on something electronic? You know, just like, I mean, I know he's a slob, but I mean, and of course that gave Doug the chance to, you know, hardly notice the backlit shadow of the bat signal continues to paint the sky, its visage now ominously masked by the spreading stain of spilled coffee. That is just, you know, Doug had to get more mask, you know, analogies into this story somehow. So, yeah.
We didn't get enough last issue.
No, we didn't get enough last year. Yeah, it was a little much. Yeah, yeah. Bruce gets the call from Lucius Fox, and maybe they really should have thought long and hard before they bailed out Janice Cosmetics just because their dads were friends. That's because even without the murders, this seems like a bad move if it's going to, you know, bring the rest of the Wayne Foundation down with it. I mean,
I love the scene after that. Like, I know, like knowing their history and the way Bullock was brought into the series originally, but now Gordon and Bullock kind of tag teaming the mayor, or like the interim mayor in the scene, and Gordon kind of like prepping him. He's like, now he's like, I need you. He's like, don't get all like, don't clam up on me. Like, don't get nervous in front of the mayor. I need you. Don't freeze up. I need you to be yourself. And just cut to Bullock is just in his office, kicking over the trash can, screaming at the mayor.
Yeah, and he walks out with it on his foot.
Yeah, he gets his foot stuck in the trash can.
So I'm saying, he's like, he's become a cartoon character in this for some reason. It is funny, though, because they're basically telling the mayor, you know, he's like, I could fire you. And it's like, yeah, then you'll just look like you're a puppet of Hamilton Hill, which is who he's replacing. And
right.
Who had hired Bullock to make Jim Gordon look bad and find dirt on him and get him out of office, which he did for a while and all that, you know, so... again, these are subplots that we're not going to get that deep into, but it is a nice little scene. Yeah, Harvey Bullock was like, you know, very important during this era, and it's got to be the reason why he was picked up for Batman the Animated Series, because you know this is the era of Harvey Bullock, really. You know,
I'm still a little bit surprised that the character of Lieutenant Eckhart in the 1989 Batman wasn't Harvey Bullock.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I saw the movie before I ever read who Bullock was in the comics, but afterwards, like having the distance, I was like, why wasn't that guy Bullock? It seems like he's perfect for Bullock the way he was in that era of like the mid-80s.
Yeah, I mean, especially before he kind of started to kind of turn to the side of the angels, you know, and, right. And then, you know, you've got that version of Flass in Batman Begins that's also pretty much Bullock. You know,
yeah.
He's not anything like the Flass from the actual Batman Year One.
Right.
But it's weird. I don't know if it was some. I think Harvey Bullock. He appeared in like a one-off story in the 70s, one or two stories, and I don't know who created him. It wasn't Minch, but or Conway, but who had written him in this era. But you know, I don't think it was. Somebody can correct me. I can't remember.
It would probably have been like David D. Reed, right?
Maybe, yeah. It might have been David V. Reed. Maybe they didn't want to pay him to, you know, for the rights to... It might have been considered during DC's period where they started giving participation and they didn't want to pay somebody. So they just, you know, basically changed the name of the character to... in Eckhart's case, anyway, you know. So I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. We also, speaking of characters that were pretty much from this era and, you know, although obviously Bullock continued, but we get... Julia Remark / Pennyworth, who is a forgotten character from this period, pretty much. The daughter of Alfred and DC war hero Mademoiselle Marie.
Mm-hmm. I just read that story last month.
Yeah, even the die. I mean, you know, that was pretty. That was kind of exciting. You know, that's kind of a nice way to tie the World War II heroes into the superheroes. You know, and it made sense because they'd already established that Alfred had. You know, served during the war and come up in the Untold Legend of the Batman, which Rob and I just covered the Treasury version on Treasury Cast. And so that was kind of nice. But I will say that it's the way that Jansen draws her doesn't look anything like Don Newton or Gene Colan had drawn her before. So if you didn't have the, when they first said Julia, I thought it's like, is this Julie Madison? What's
right? What, yeah, yeah.
You know, who's he dating here? And it's like, oh, that's supposed to be Julia Pennyworth. Okay, all right.
There's a thing in the comics. It might be going on like right now because I'm a few, I don't know, half a year behind on like some of the current, more than that, on the contemporary Batman comics. But it's either in the new series by Matt Fraction or the detective series by Tom Taylor. But I think they're bringing a new character to be kind of the new Alfred. And actually, instead of just having this AI hologram Alfred, actually having a flesh and blood character. And it's a young woman. I think it's supposed to be Daphne Pennyworth, not Julia.
Now that's his niece. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that would be interesting. And I like that idea. And before I heard that, because I read her story too. And I was like, this would be a fun character. Like this would be an interesting avenue to play. Like if we're going to leave Alfred dead for however long we're going to do that, instead of just having this hologram, this AI, bring in another character with some kind of connection. It could be his daughter, could be Daphne, whatever version Alicia Silverstone was with the Batgirl thing.
Barbara Wilson, yeah.
I don't know. I think it's just it's an interesting thing of having a woman in that role.
Yeah.
Working as Batman's, I mean, Gal Friday in this case. Because, like, I don't know, like, the only other thing I could think of was, like, if her name was Harriet. And it was, like, not quite Aunt Harriet, but something, a sort of send-up to that. But I just think it'll be interesting to give him a new, not gentleman's gentleman, but gentleman's woman.
Yeah.
That sounds odd.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm behind on those two, and I haven't read that part yet. But Daphne was an established character back in the late 60s, early 70s. I think maybe introduced during the Frank Robbins written era. And he had a brother, Wilfred, and I think Daphne is his daughter. And I think Daphne is the character that Batman follows to the famous story, The Demon of Gothos Mansion, which, you know, our listener, Gothos Mansion, takes his name from, where Neil Adams riffs on the Mad Monk cover. I believe Batman follows Daphne there to that, to protect her or something, if I remember. I could be 100% wrong, and I'm getting two different stories mixed up. That's just off the top of my head. So, yeah, Daphne is an established, long forgotten, but established character, much like Julia Pennyworth, I guess.
That's a good story. We should talk about the Demon of Gothos Mansion. Maybe this September or something.
Yeah, we could do that. That'd be good.
Maybe it's already on my schedule.
It might be. Yeah, that's true. So the Wayne Foundation is having a benefit for famine relief in Ethiopia. You know, that's very much on the minds of everybody in 1985 due to, you know, all the attention brought to it by the famine there and by Band-Aid and We Are the World and Live Aid. But I do like how the commentary of how Julia brings up it seems distasteful to hold $1,000 plate dinner for a famine charity.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, it's like, well, I guess they're putting their money where their, you know, literally where their mouths are, I guess. So, but it's, you know, when they brought that up, I'm like, okay, you know, not that, I mean, I'm not making light of it. I mean, it's nice that they're actually referencing something going on at the time, you know, and I'm sure it's not, I haven't kept up, but the situation there probably still ain't great. But yeah, it was, you know, it just brought to mind all the things that happened around that time to try to bring attention to the famine in Ethiopia. So, of course, we get Black Mask abducting Cersei, as we suspected from last issue. And, you know, that was a nice follow-up there. It's kind of, the way Klaus draws her, we never quite see her face that close, which I think is interesting. We never really see a close-up of her beautiful face before it's, you know, taken away. Of course, you know, Mandrake took care of that last time, but, you know, it's kind of an interesting choice, but maybe, again, maybe things were, he didn't have as many pages. To do even, I mean, in the page where they're putting the crone mask over her, the mask is covering the bottom half of her face. And then it is kind of interesting how it's kind of disturbing. The crone mask is pretty hideous. And then you see the makeup oozing over her eyes.
Yeah.
That's like, that whole eye injury thing that everybody always, you know, just.
Right.
Blah. Yeah.
Something kind of on page 11, when Black Mask and his goons kick down her door, he's kind of like at the front, so it kind of makes it look like he's the one who busted down the door and they're following him, but he's also like, he's hunched over in this like very kind of aggressive posture with his hands outstretched, but it's like, it seems like he would be like holding guns or he's like in a Wolverine posture or something like that. And then later on towards the end, on page 16, when he comes into her, like the little cell that he's keeping her in, when he gives her the other mask, again, he's in that same kind of hunched over posture, like for some reason. And then the last panel, he's like, he's clapping his hands together. Like, does he have scoliosis or something? Like, why is he standing this way? Like, I don't know why Klaus Janson draws him in these weird positions. Like, it makes it seem like he's much more aggressive and kind of like moving action oriented, but it's just, he's a guy in a suit putting masks on people. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's just, it's a weird kind of composition of like the way he draws the body that it kind of seems not to fit who Black Mask is.
Yeah, a good point. And it's the direct opposition to what you pointed out, how stiff he is on the cover.
Yeah.
Because he's like completely standing erect in the background there. But yeah, you're right. He's almost like he's some kind of hulking, you know, like he's like Bruno Mannheim from Jack Kirby's Jimmy Olsen comics or something.
Yeah.
You know, like a big brutish guy in a suit or something, or Hammerhead or somebody like that, you know, not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and I did notice, it's like, well, how hard did they have to knock that door down? It's literally in splinters. You know, it's like, what is that door made of? Balsa wood? Wow. You know, I'm sure there was an easier way to shoot the lock off or something and then come in, you know. But it's dramatic. I mean, you know, but again, it's one of those cases where there's just a lot of minimal details, very ethereal, very scratchy. And again, Cersei doesn't look overly attractive, you know, at any point at all before, you know, which I think is kind of goes against what the story is trying to tell you. She should, you know, be a superficial bombshell before they do what they do to her. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
And also in the story, is it just me or is it kind of reckless to have the False Facers follow Bruce Wayne and Jason Todd? And then they emerge as Batman and Robin, because isn't Robin's age a dead giveaway that he's Jason and therefore Bruce is Batman?
I mean, you might think that, but these goons are clearly pretty dumb.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. That's, I guess it's kind of, you know, kind of goes to the other comic we're covering right now where somebody's trying to guess who Bruce, you know, Batman and Robin are. And, you know, they're rich people with young wards, you know, that type of thing, young children or young wards or something. So, yeah, but I do like the Tin Man mask with the little hat. That's kind of a nice little touch. And
yeah, I was trying to, you know, it's the lion and the Tin Man, right? That's what they.
I guess I don't know. Is that supposed to be the lion? I guess it is. I couldn't decide if it was I guess it is kind of more like the classic illustrations of the Tin Man versus the lion versus the movie, you know.
It also looks kind of simian, like a baboon or gorilla, so I don't know.
Yeah, it kind of looks like, you know, almost Planet of the Apes, like Dr. Zaius or something, you know.
Yeah,
kind of,
yeah,
kind of look to it. Yeah, but you know, there's some nice action sequences where Batman and Robin beat the hell out of these guys and but they don't get anything out of them. Again, it's like that part, you know, it's kind of cool that they bake it in that occasionally Batman doesn't get the info out of people, you know, because they were recruited by members who called them. So it's like they've never had direct contact with Black Mask. They didn't go to the crypt like some of the other people did. So it's nice for him to get a cold lead, but it also, again, other than Cersei's abduction, kind of makes this middle chapter kind of pointless in some ways. It just seems kind of filler-esque, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then Black Mask, you know, like I said, he comes in and tells her, you know, you can either be my queen or I'll give you the full treatment. And you don't really see her face. I do like that. You don't even, you just see her head and her hands. And she pulls this pinkish mask off the wall with a heart near the eye, like a little beauty mark. And the eyes above, her eyes above the mask as she's putting on that last panel with the hulking hunched over Black Mask, as you pointed out behind her, that's a very Dark Knight Returns face right there. That looks like something straight out of Dark Knight Returns right there. So, you know, and Klaus Janson might be inking Dark Knight Returns right now. You know, this is mid-1985. He's probably working on it, you know. If he isn't, he's getting ready to. So, yeah.
Maybe that's why he felt this was rushed.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. That's true. He's doing the good stuff. That's going on that new Baxter paper and that whatever what they're calling this prestige format, whatever that is. I better do a better job over there, you know.
Right. Nobody's going to remember this story.
Right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the next chapter and the return of Mandrake. But, you know, after the very heavy packed story last time, this one seems pretty thin. And in fact, you could tell by my synopsis, you know, last time my synopsis was like the Gettysburg Address. This time it was pretty short, so.
I like Black Mask's his gimmick, his motif throughout the story. Like this, the horror that he presents, this threat of capturing people in their homes where they feel most safe, and then just trapping them with these masks. And there's so many different ways that you could do to kind of like that make this horrifying. Like the way they do it, like the mask just releases this slow toxin that kills you over, that kills you slowly and painfully, and just like the horror of knowing that your death is coming from this poison. And then when the cops show up to remove the mask, it rips your face off. That's horrifying. But like also like the fate that he leaves for Cersei, like, okay, I trapped you in this mask, you're not going to die, but if you take the mask off, it'll rip your face off, and like you'll be a monster for life. Either like just there's, oh man, there's a lot of stuff going on here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pretty dark. You know, it's for the period, it's very dark for a newsstand comic in the Batman line. We really hadn't seen anything like that. I forgot to mention they do make a reference to Dr. Fang, who was this would-be vampire-like crime lord that Batman had just taken care of a few issues before. And he's definitely one of those guys that has never really resurfaced that I know of. But so modern writers, you could resurrect Dr. Fang. There you go. You know?
The other thing is the sort of modern take, it's been for a long time now, the take of Black Mask is his mask is shaped as a skull, which is very cool. It's very striking looking. It's something easy to pop, but maybe it's just like it's been done too much. Like it seems kind of like generic and baby, because like nothing's going to be better than the Red Skull when you come to that. But I've seen like those kind of black skull masks. There's something about this mask, a way that Mandrake designed it originally, which is just very plain. It's just a face, but it's carved out of black wood or marble or something like that. It wouldn't be carved out of marble. But just, it's just, there's something more. I think this is actually a scarier mask than the black skull face.
Yeah, I do too. I like this better. I know the reason he's got it is because eventually his face actually turns into that and all that. But it's like, yeah, this is more original. It's more, and even though obviously there's nothing more primal than a skull because we've all got a skull underneath our skin, but it's like there's just something a little more, I don't know, it seems like you've got that kind of like a cultural history of different tribal masks, you know, and mm-hmm. it just seems more in juxtaposed with that gangster suit. It's just that pinstriped, outdated by 1985, but you know, cool looking, almost zoot suit, gangster suit, you know,
mm-hmm.
is a better visual than just the Red Skull with a black skull in a white suit and a, you know, black shirt and a gray tie or whatever he wears nowadays. You know, it's that's just, yeah, it's slick and I don't hate it, but it's like, yeah, he's like literally the Black Skull versus the Red Skull now, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Yep. Me too. So we'll take a quick promo break. And when we come back, we'll dive back into Batman and Robin Year One with issue number 8.
It's Fade Out. Hosted by film fanatic Rob Kelly and a roster of special guests, Fade Out will examine the final films of Hollywood's brightest lights, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
So which is the hottest Marvel character?
Iron Man.
Ant-Man. I can't decide between Professor X and Magneto, so both.
Loki.
Is Wolverine Marvel?
What about White Tiger?
What about White Tiger?
Doc Samson.
Who's he?
Star Fox.
That's a video game.
The girls go on a journey to determine every Marvel character's hotness in Ohotmu or Not, the official handbook of the Marvel Universe podcast you didn't know you wanted. Available on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Batman and Robin Year 1 Issue 8 came out on June 18th, 2025. The cover shows a close-up of Clayface's mask with a kind of slash above his mouth, with the area above the slash but below the brim of his hat filled in with a close-up of Batman and Robin, but they're positioned in such a way that one of each of their eyes lines up with where Clayface's eyes should be. It's hard to describe, and I don't feel like I'm adequately conveying this, so obviously we will have the image posted on the website. Chris, what do you think about this cover?
I mean, I like it. It's Chris Samnee, so of course it's beautiful. I can see that they're supposed to be in the shadow from the brim of his hat over his eyes, but it takes a bit of work for me to make it all come together because it looks like he's wearing like some kind of reflective sunglasses, which he's not. It kind of gives me a V for Vendetta kind of because it's such a close up on his mask too.
Yep.
With the little mustache. It's still beautiful, though I do actually prefer, I've got the variant cover on the outside of that that's by Michael Cho, which is a great collage with Two-Face in the middle and Batman up top and Robin swinging below and Bruce and Robin's heads and Alfred and Gordon and the bat signal, and it's just it's Michael Cho, so it's beautiful too. So it's
right. I'm looking at that because I've got the trade paperback in my hand. Yeah.
Yeah. I you know, between the two of them, no offense to Chris Samnee on this one, but though I like that one better, although this one is probably more suited to the comic. But yeah, it's I applaud him for, you know, experimenting, and it's kind of like what he did last time, but I just now noticed that the brim of his hat is also reflecting like the city. That's weird.
Yeah, it's like a cutout or something.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Without, you know, I didn't notice that behind the logo, but yeah, because you can see the city, it's around his face too, yeah. It's an interesting visual. It looks good, but yeah, I'm not. It doesn't quite succeed like last issue's experiment with the way you had Bruce Wayne, the cowl over the shadow, the shadows making the cowl and the bat symbol mm-hmm. of all the photos and all that. So yeah,
it's an interesting unintended connection and juxtaposition with Clayface's mask that we've seen him wear throughout the series and Black Mask that we just talked about a couple minutes ago.
Yeah, there's a lot. And then, of course, we've got the whole Bruce Wayne being a target thing, which is like, we did not plan this, guys. It just happened this way. It's weird.
All right. Chapter 8 is co-plotted by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee, with Waid scripting and Samnee drawing. Matthias Lopez colored the issue, Clayton Cowles lettered it, and Andrew Marino and Rob Levin edited it. At a stately manor that is not, in fact, Wayne's, General Grimaldi's hitmen attempt to murder a man and his child, but the dynamic duo intervene. Robin disarms one of the would-be killers and turns his gun back on him. Batman does not respond well to Dick threatening someone, even a bad guy, with a gun. Later, Batman confronts Commissioner Gordon about the police investigation into Batman. Then they talk about fatherhood. On Gordon's order, Bruce Wayne travels with police protection. As Alfred drives them back to the mansion, they are run off the road by Grimaldi's men, who kill the cop. Clayface impersonates Bruce Wayne and heads to the manor. The real Bruce runs from the scene of the car crash, cowardly calling for help. Grimaldi's men no longer think he's capable of being Batman. That's the last thought they have before Alfred beats the crap out of them. At Wayne Manor, Clay Bruce tries to convince Dick that he's the real deal, but Dick suspects something is off and tests him. Bruce Face realizes that Dick has figured him out and tries to kill the boy, but Batman arrives to save his ward. He hurts Clayface with vials of liquid nitrogen, driving the monster away. Clayface retreats to his hideout, where his new partner, Two-Face, is waiting for him. All right, what'd you think about it?
Oh, this is another great one. I like this one a lot. I will say, though, I you know, the opening chap, the opening bit, I guess Grimaldi thinks that Robin might be a girl, because the guy has the millionaire has a daughter, not a son. Then mm-hmm. he held Robin captive. Couldn't he figure out that was a boy when he had, you know? It's like,
I mean, the fact that it's not obvious that she's a girl until page 2 when we kind of see her face, because I think because Samnee was trying to hide who these people are, as if we would just expect Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson to be playing tennis at night. Yeah, I think that just kind of shows like the way that Chris Samnee is able to capture Dick's prepubescent anatomy,
right,
and like the kind of understanding of that like, yeah, at that age there's not a lot physically different between the way a boy's body and a way the girl's body looks. So I think that's kind of an interesting touch.
Yeah, that's true.
Once the boys spring into action, Robin's like little maneuver, first of all, managing to use the tennis net and have enough leverage to kick himself up like that. I was like, that must be a really taut net because that thing should be giving away. But his maneuver, the way he kicks the gun out of the hand and kind of does a backflip and catches it. I was like, that's a smooth move. Like, props to Robin for that one.
Yeah, that's great. It's a great move. But yeah, Batman's reaction, man. Woo.
Yeah, perfect. Like slapping the gun out of his hand. And then when the art gets all red on their faces, when it's just like, no guns. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah. I wasn't gonna. I was just wanted to scare him, honest. Unacceptable. Yeah. And then the next spread over top the credits, yeah, with the panels where he's dressing him down, and in between the panels of Batman yelling at him, you get Joe Chill in red, and then the pearls, and then Bruce in the spotlight with Joe Chill running away with his parents' body. They're very Mazzucchelli, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
It's fantastic. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, it's such a good little shorthand to give the nuance behind Batman's lecture, just like dressing him down that they don't use guns. It's like, okay, why is he overreacting? If you didn't know anything about Batman, why is he overreacting in this way? It's like, oh, because that's what he's seeing every time he sees a gun. That's the image that is flashing in his mind.
I like Robin's response, though. Okay. Do you even know how hard it is to scare anybody in this costume?
He did pick it, didn't he? It's his costume.
It's based on his circus outfit in this one, too, right? I think. So.
I really like this quiet moment between Batman and Gordon. And we kind of get two different emotional beats here. The first one is, you know, Gordon, he's getting the report on, it's like, oh yeah, this guy called in that somebody attacked him and his daughter, the crooks were like tied up on the tennis court. He's like, yeah, that sounds like Batman. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when Batman comes in, I like how at first when he's upset with Gordon, he's just the shadow with eyes.
Yeah. There's a menace to him in this scene. It's like for the first time, these two might be at odds and things might be going down, but I don't know if this shows a kind of maturity or a growth on Batman's part that he's willing to extend him and give Gordon the benefit of the doubt. And maybe I wonder if that's something that has come to him just as he's sort of taken on this role of fatherhood. Maybe he's becoming a little bit more understanding, a little bit more patient. But the fact that he's like, I've always trusted you, that we have this kind of working relationship. It's like, was that a mistake? And Gordon has to say, he's like, no, it was a file on you that I opened probably back during year one when he was ordered to find out who, like, Batman was, when they were chasing him back in that story when Commissioner Loeb was in charge. But it's like, the case has been in a vault. It's like, it's not an open investigation. It's like, but Clayface got it. Now it's out there. And the people who were on that list are targets. So, but he also mentions, like, it's not a short list. So, okay, well, that means they're not any closer to finding out it's Bruce, but it's also, okay, a lot more people could be in danger then.
Right, yeah. I like that Batman, like, he almost seems like he's kind of, he lets his guard down that he's like, I'm hurt by this, you know, like, you know, I like that. It's very, you know, it's like, am I mistaken? You know, when he comes out of the shadows, it's great. And I like the fact that, you know, this is probably, like I said earlier when we were talking about this is, stems from that visit that Gordon, and he brought his wife along with him to Wayne Manor when Bruce had the actress with him that didn't speak English and, you know, playing his, like, I was with her all night or whatever. I don't know her name, and she doesn't speak English, you know, that type of thing.
For Batman, this is kind of a betrayal that he wasn't expecting.
Right, yeah.
And then Gordon's about to leave, and he turns around, and Batman is standing at the window. And I love his line. He's like, no poof, I turned my back, but you're just still here. Gordon does have a couple of really cute photos of him and Barbara on his desk. One when she's like a newborn and one when she's a little bit older, a toddler, maybe wearing his police hat. And those are cool little pictures.
And he does say that your daughter Barbara, she was Robin's age here. Is she well behaved? So this establishes that Barbara's still a little bit older than Dick.
Right.
But obviously not as much as she was back in the original Earth One continuity, where there was quite a bit of an age gap there, you know, because you gotta ship Nightwing and Barbara Gordon, you know, so.
Not me. I ship her with, I don't even know his name now. He's like a private eye or something.
Jason Bard?
Yeah, it's Jason Bard, yeah.
And Dick and Corey forever.
No, I don't even care about that.
Just kidding. I like both. I do like the Dick Barber thing. I do. But that one issue of Birds of Prey, I think it's issue number 8, that totally nailed it for me, where he takes her to the circus, and you know, with, of course, that's when she was paralyzed, and he takes her swinging on the trapeze again, and yeah, that's a great one. Yeah.
This just came to me. Oh, well, obviously we know what the answer is now, but when I'm thinking way back to the beginning of this episode when we were talking about the sequel to this story, Dynamic Duos. And my first thought was, well, who could that be referring to? And now we know that it's Catwoman and a potential sidekick for her. For a second there, I was kind of like, are they going to introduce the Silver Age Batwoman and Batgirl? Are we getting on Kathy Kane and this whole thing?
Like, yeah.
Like, that would be interesting.
That would be Betty and Kathy and
Betty. Yeah,
that would be cool. I'd like to see them brought back. Like, I guess Kathy exists as Kate Kane's what, aunt or something in modern continuity. Yeah, they're not the same character. Yeah, so yeah.
The other thing about this, obviously, I mean, Batman is not above hypocrisy. We know this, but thinking about it, like, the way he feels betrayed that Gordon was sitting on this file investigating him, that he had this information that he might use against him if anything ever went wrong. It's like, all right, Batman, yeah, you can feel bad about that, but as they say, I'm old enough to remember a story also by Mark Waid called Tower of Babel, in which case Batman kept files on all of the Justice League members to use against them if he wanted to. And that got leaked too. So.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, moving forward at some point, Batman in most continuities knows who Barbara, he figures out that Barbara is Batgirl, and yet he still lets her play the game and doesn't say anything to Gordon. And of course that came to horrific results in the awesome new Batman Adventures episode.
Right.
Over the Edge? Over the Edge. Yeah. Oh my God, what a great episode. Of course, it's all Barbara's fear toxin induced dream, but yeah, wow. Oh, I still remember that beginning of that episode where Batman and Robin are running through the Batcave from the cops, from Gordon. Yeah. I'm like, holy crap, what is going on? It's just like, but anyway, yeah, so there's that line. Yeah, but you're right, the Tower of Babel. And Mark Waid has said he kind of wished he never wrote that story because it opened a Pandora's box of Batman being this, you know, like he has to, it added to that Batman has to be prepared for every contingency, even if it means, you know, he doesn't trust anyone and trust his allies, his friends, his teammates. And it kind of played into Batman being this paranoid nut job more than he probably ever wanted it to, because people took it and ran with it. You got O-Mac and Brother Eye and all that crap out of it, you know, and it's like, yeah, not to say crap, but, you know, I don't particularly care for it. I know a lot of people like it. I don't, but I shouldn't say crap. All that out of it. But, yeah, so, yeah, you're right. It's kind of, yeah. And also, Batman, you know, won't trust Gordon with the secret identity either.
Right.
You know, it's like he won't tell him I'm Bruce Wayne. You know, it's like I guess he kind of can't to a point, because then he might have to arrest him at some point.
I still think that's the way I've always reconciled it in my head, is that Gordon knows or has enough information to figure it out, but doesn't want confirmation.
Right.
And Batman can't confirm it for him, because at that point, Gordon can't hide it anymore. He can't deny it anymore. Then he has to act, or he's not being a good cop.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of, in that, not to go back to that, but in that Over the Edge, Gordon basically says that he basically always knew. It just took a few phone calls and a little more digging, and then he had it, you know, concrete evidence enough to come at Wayne Manor with a giant tank and, you know, tear the doors down and all that. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oof.
And then, well, so we get like this nice little sweet little moment of them kind of bonding over parenthood and how hard it is raising children. And then contrast that with a scene with General Grimaldi talking to his basically catatonic, mute, invalid father, just rubbing it in, just being the worst possible son. Who the hell knows what this guy did to Grimaldi when he was younger, but he is just sadistic in the way he treats his father and talks about all the ways that he's going to beat him and control the city and be a better gangster. But he's also like, they're at the restaurant and he has like, he orders the primavera. He's like, yeah, it's my father's favorite dish. I love to have him stare at it and know that he can't eat it. And it's just, oh, it's so, so bad.
Yeah. That is just torture. I mean, you know, to do that, I mean, to be, I mean, I am not in that kind of, you know, medical state, thankfully. And, you know, but I remember one time I had some kind of stomach thing and it wasn't catching, but I literally couldn't, it lasted for a while and I could not eat basically anything without like throwing it up.
Yeah.
And it was like around Christmas and I went down to like my family's Christmas and I was over the infectious part of it, but I still wasn't over that I could really eat. And
right. That
was torture, you know, to be at like Christmas dinner at my grandmother's house and not be able to eat. It was just like, I do not want to be here. This is awful. Mm-hmm. I can't enjoy myself. You know, it's like, so I can't, I mean, I feel for the guy, you know, and it's, I don't, yeah, again, I don't know what Grimaldi's dad did to him, but man, Grimaldi is an SOB. I mean, it's just God.
He's got a line like in the middle of his monologue, which he's talking for most of the page here. He's just in the middle of it. He's like, he says, you don't control a city just by manipulating criminals or its drug trade. Not today. You control a city by making those in power afraid of you. I'm like, that's kind of an evergreen statement that can be applied to our real world and the things that are going on in our lives today.
That's true.
That could explain a whole lot of problems going on right now because of people being controlled by.
Yep.
Anyway, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole right now.
Yeah, I hear you. Yep.
Then we get this. We get a sequence which seems like, I was like, okay, this could be ripe for something kind of interesting. There, it's Alfred is driving Bruce Wayne home on the dark road towards the manor, but they're not alone. There's a cop with it was basically Bruce's protection detail on orders from Gordon. And the guy, like, Bruce is like, you don't need to do this, I'll be fine. He's like, nope, can't leave you alone. And then even as he's talking, you just see the headlights like silhouetting him through the window and then crack. Like another car runs into theirs and knocks him off. Credit to this unknown police officer, you know, who's trying to do his job, and he's like, stay in the car, Wayne, and he's going to confront the driver of the other car and just instantly gets gunned down. So
I kind of feel bad. It's kind, you know, I wonder if Bruce kind of feels guilty because he obviously knows he's Batman. And he really doesn't need protection, but he's got to go along with this to save his secret identity. And now this guy's dead.
Yeah.
So in some ways, his charade has got this guy killed, you know. So, I mean, yeah, I don't want to, you know, you don't want to think too much about that. But, yeah
it's like to the extent that he's not responsible for the actions that these murderers take. Like, you know, he didn't kill this guy. They killed him. They could have chosen not to kill him.
Right,
so
yeah. But he put, he couldn't say, well, you don't need to put a cop with me because I'm me, you know, don't worry about Bruce Wayne or, you know, but I did. This is kind of like a darker, much darker version of the first Batgirl story where Killer Moth abducts Bruce Wayne and then Batgirl stops him on her way to the costume party. Barbara is Batgirl, her first act is Batgirl. So. And I love how Bruce runs off like a coward. You know, that's great.
That is such a jarring sight to see Bruce run. Help! Somebody help me!
You can just hear Kevin Conroy's like light Bruce Wayne voice yelling that out. You know?
Oh yeah,
it's great. It's, yeah.
And the goods, because at this point Clayface has gone to the house in the guise of Bruce. And his goons are just sitting there just kind of watching Bruce run away. And they're like, well, I guess he's not Batman. And as they're thinking about that, you see, Alfred just goes to work on these guys.
Yeah, he beats the hell out of them. I like I like, you know, I think Martin Gray has said he doesn't like the MI6, you know, Alfred or MI5 or whatever, Alfred. But, I think sometimes they can go too far with it. But I do like Alfred being a capable badass, you know.
Yeah.
I like, you know, I don't want him to be like James Bond, but I...
Right, right. He doesn't need to be a Special Forces, you know, British SAS, but being able to take these guys out.
Yeah, and I mean, that was established quite a while. Again, until Legend of Batman, Batman the Animated Series, he was, you know, he was in British intelligence. It comes up in an episode later, you know. His old partner comes back and everything, so it's like, you know, it's not... I mean, it's been established for quite a while, so it's like Alfred should know how to take care of himself, and people would underestimate him because he's this older, thin guy, but he's a tough old bastard, you know? That's what I like about it.
He's made of sterner stuff.
Yep, that's right.
Like in Batman Begins, doesn't Michael Caine take a guy out with a golf club from the back of the car or something?
Yep.
And I like that even as Bruce is running away screaming, like he activates their like silent comm and he's like telling Alfred and everything, like what's going on, that he's doubling back. And then we get the scene of fake Bruce, actually Clayface, like going in the house and Dick is just walking through the hallway, just carrying like just an armful of just food and snacks and stuff. He's got a sandwich in his mouth that he's kind of talking through. And he's like, why is he, how was school today? He's like, school was canceled. Don't you remember? He's like, oh yeah, that's the mind. And Dick's like, are you still mad at me about what happened last night? And clearly he doesn't know and like couldn't even be bothered to think about it. He's just like, why don't you go to your room and think about what you've done? It's like just such an obvious cliche, but also just a stupid thing to say in that sense. Like,
yeah, it's like the dad that's not really involved and the mom's like, do you know what your son did? And before they even asked, it's like, I don't care. It's like, go to your room, you know, just that kind of thing, you know.
Like, I mean, like, if he actually suspects that Bruce could be Batman, then it, like, it doesn't occur to him that this kid is Robin. Like, he doesn't treat him that way at all or anything.
Yeah, he didn't say something about, like, you know, like, something about, because, I mean, like what they've been doing, like a case they'd been on or, you know, what had happened the night before, you know, or like... You know, he probably knew that they tried to hit the people playing tennis, and so he could have. Yeah, you're right. It would have made more sense for him to try to trick Dick into like revealing what he's doing. But yeah, it's like he kind of bypassed the fact that this kid could be Robin, and he's just gonna go search through Bruce's stuff. Yeah.
When he's rifling through the office, do you like the little Batman 66 Easter egg?
Yes, he's pushing over the head of the Shakespeare bust to look to see if there's something under there. You know, it's like a switch.
Yeah, and he's actually saying, isn't there a switch of some kind?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I love that. That's great. Yeah, yeah. Obviously, Wade and Samney are big Batman 66 fans, obviously.
So. Oh, yeah, and they'll continue to ramp that up as we go along the last few.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a huge part of the lore. It just is, and especially when you're dealing with Batman and Robin, it almost has to come up, and they do it. But I don't think they go overboard with it. There's just enough little nods here and there, and I wouldn't care if they did go overboard with it myself, but... I don't think they do, but yeah, I really love that. When that come up, I'm like, yes, yeah.
And Dick comes back into the office. He's like, can I talk to you? He's like, these kids are bullying me at school. And so Higgins like, okay, this kid is clearly not Robin if he can't take care of himself. And then he kind of like suggests, like, you know, why don't they enroll in some self-defense course? And he kind of giving him like this sort of, you know, jocular, like, you know, punching kind of motions and everything. Like, yeah, you little scamp. Like, he's acting as if he's like a real dad concern, like totally changing his attitude now. But at this point, Dick is like, yeah, this is not Bruce. Who the hell is this?
I do like how he actually says, well, they remember I was in the circus, so some of them think I'm that kid in a cape who follows Batman around. Robin, right? That's his name, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so he's actually like saying, they think I'm Robin, which is crazy, you know, which I mean, that's a nice little, like, really way to just, like, completely, in case he did think he was Robin, he just, like, basically said, I'm not Robin, you know, so.
Right. And yeah, to also confirm that he's not talking to Bruce, yeah, clearly, so. And then he slips away and he's trying to call Bruce, trying to get in touch with somebody, but Clayface figures it out, and we get that splash page of Clayface taking the phone out of his hand, and it's half Bruce, half Clayface. And at this point, Clayface is like full on larger than human mud monster, like he is in the animated series.
Yeah, yeah, he's the total BTAZ Clayface here. He looks great. Yeah.
And chasing Robin through the house, and Robin sliding under the desk, and then Batman crashes through his own window.
Yeah.
And Batman, didn't you have another entrance in there? But okay.
Right. And I love it whenever they, you know, the great thing about Clayface is, and they did this on the animated series, you can just kick him completely through the head and
right.
come out the, and Batman's like just plowing through his head and his shoulder with his knees. It's like, you know, it forms back obviously quickly, but yeah, he's, you know, you never get tired of that. And when they, you know, they can blow him up, they can do, you know, I'll, which we get here in a minute what happens. So yeah.
And he throws these vials of liquid nitrogen in it that hurt Clayface and get him to run off. And then once he leaves, he actually left some of his clay behind him. And Batman's like, he gets a sample of the mud or the clay in a bag. And he's like, somebody needs to take this down to the lab so we can analyze it. And Alfred's like, I think the boy should take it down.
Yeah. <It's> like, and Dick looks like he just handed him a bag of dog poo, you know.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, and that's the way he's treating it. It's like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I can understand like the aversion. It's like, it's not just clay, it's like this was a person a few seconds ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Dick's line. I could tell he wasn't you, he was friendlier. and the font's smaller, so it's like he says it like kinda, he says it low like he shouldn't be saying it, but he says it anyway, you know, like he was friendlier, you know?
Like, yeah. Almost like he's kind of like realizing as he's saying it. He's like, no
yeah.
offense.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just a little continuance of this Clayface, Two-Face faces team up that we're getting.
Yeah. So. I like that he's got his like head up against the door. It reminds me of that bit, and again, we're going to the animated series, but that's the best version of Clayface, where he like literally bangs his head against the wall and it just melts as he's
yeah
that's what it looks like right there. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Again, another great issue. We are two-thirds of the way through the series now.
Wow. Well, we obviously know we've got a sequel to cover, you know, whether we go ahead and cover it right away or not, we've got a sequel to cover, you know, so that's fun too. So we know we're not going to run out of Wade and Samney Batman material, which is wonderful, so.
So, next month, we're gonna cover the next issue, issue 9, and the next Batman issue that finishes up the Black Mask trilogy, right?
Yep, I'm looking forward to it. We get Tom Mandrake back and a full issue, you know. So I haven't read ahead. Of course, I read it years ago. I haven't reread it in a long time. I haven't read ahead, so I'm looking forward to how that wraps up. I remember how it wraps up, but to reading it, you know, and definitely more of year one. And by then, we'll we can give you a report on what we thought of Supergirl, because we've already seen it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so you know, if we haven't done that on the network elsewhere, no promises. You know, we don't like to do reviews of movies we don't like. That doesn't end well, BBS.
There's a precedent for that.
There's a precedent for that. We have accords that say we're not supposed to do that, so we don't want to do that. Although we did turn around and do it again when we did that Justice Society animated movie, because we didn't like the way that turned
that's right.
out. Yeah, we did it again when we did that one, because they did something really, it was great otherwise, and then they took a turn and did something really awful in that one, so, especially for this network.
They did Aquaman dirty.
Yeah, they did Aquaman real dirty. Yeah, they did. Yeah, woo, yeah. So will that wrap it up for this time?
I believe it will.
Okay, well then we'll say Batman Nightcast is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. Feedback for the show can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also find Batman Nightcast and the Fire & Water Network on Facebook, Blue Sky, and other social media platforms.
If you enjoyed this episode, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/FWPodcast to support Batman Nightcast or your other favorite shows on the Fire & Water Podcast Network.
As always, thank you for listening.